to welcome again. So this is the fourth one. So far I've mainly been talking, and we've kind of been I introduced right the practice, you know, the rationale for the practice, right? And why we do it, how we do it, the significance, the symbology, etc., all those things, right? I know there's a couple of new people today. It's going to be a little confusing, maybe, but bear with us. So today we're actually going to do the practice. So today's we're going to, you know, so it's, you know, so, and let's see. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention before we start, which is that, one I just remembered, but the other one I just forgot. Well, I was asked to tell you that on weekdays at 8 o'clock, there is a meditation group that meets here every weekday at 8 o'clock. Richard Potter. 8 a.m. 8 a.m., thank you. Richard Potter told me to mention it. And, you know, anybody can drop in. It goes from 8 to 9. I'm sure that you're not held to 9 o'clock. So if you need to leave before then, I'm sure you can. I don't have that much more details in the two sentences I told you because I really don't know that much about it. But Jill, who will be here next week, will give you a better spiel. Now, what's the other thing I was going to mention? Ah, of course. Jeez. Yes, so tomorrow is Labab Duchen, right? Which is the... Do you guys all know the story of Labab Duchen? No? Well, I'll give you the short version. So you know the Buddha, 2,600 years ago now, his mother died when he was a few days old, maybe a week old at the most. And so he was brought up by his aunt, who was his mother's sister. I think she was also one of the queens. I'm not exactly sure. In any case, after the Buddha... Skip forward 30 years, he reaches enlightenment, and he starts teaching. You know, he gives the first wheel of the Dharma in Sarnath, and not in Sarnath, not for the second wheel. First wheel must have been in that forest, whatever that place is called. Deer Park, thank you, Deer Park, which is near Sarnath, actually. But in any case... after he gives his first turning of the wheel of the Dharma, at some point he goes up to Tushita Pure Land, which is where Buddha Maitreya is. That's Buddha Maitreya's Pure Land, right? And Buddha Maitreya being the next Buddha to come, right? Don't know exactly when, but at some point after the teachings degenerate, he will come and revive the teachings, right? That's the story. He went to Buddha, Maitreya's Pure Land, where his mother had been reborn in the Buddha, Tushita Pure Land. And so he gave the teachings, to all the beings there, including his mother. And so, the people down in our impure land, made many requests for him to, not to stay there, but to, like we do, please come and teach, right? Continue to turn the wheel of the Dharma, right? One of the seven limbs. So they did one of those seven limbs. And so he descended from Tushita Pure Land, and he continued to teach the Dharma on Earth, right, on our plane. So this is the anniversary of that day, right? So Tuesday tomorrow is the anniversary of the day that he descended from Tushita Pure Land to teach sentient beings like us, ordinary beings like us. So it's a very auspicious day. There's only about maybe three or four other days like this during the year, you know, the Buddha's birthday and the death day, and then descent from Tushita Pure Land, and maybe there's one other one, you know, like that, which are very, very auspicious. So as you saw, I hope you saw my email on the Kadampa list. Are you all on the Kadampa list? Okay, good. So if you can at all, I encourage you to at least come to tomorrow night's 7 o'clock, I think, right? 7 o'clock? Yes. It's on the thing. It's 7 o'clock. There we go. So at 7 o'clock, there will be a Shakyamuni Buddha Guru Puja, which is the one we are happening to do, right? Which is great. Right, so we will have done it today. You will know what we're why you're going to be saying all the words tomorrow. But the best part is that you will be led by a qualified teacher, unlike me, which is Geshe-la. Right, so there is great benefit to be in a teacher's presence like him and do the practice. Right, because as you know, the teachers are the representatives of the Buddha in our plane, right? Because that's how we come into contact with the great beings, is through the teacher, right? So that's why. So if you can at all, at a minimum, come tomorrow at 7 o'clock, right, to do the practice. But if you are able, I would encourage you to take the precepts tomorrow morning at 6. Six is because you have to do it before sunrise. Just be happy that the time changed, because otherwise it would have been 5. I have taken precepts at 5, which if you get up at 4:30. So anyway, and so the precepts are basically that you essentially take a very short version, short few 7, 8, 10, I can't remember, vows that you will abide by for the rest of the day. So it's only a 24-hour. You have to keep the precepts for 24 hours. That's really it, right? One of them being, for example, not eating after lunch, because that is in the monastic tradition, right? In the old days, they didn't eat. They only ate one meal a day. We get to eat two, breakfast and lunch, but after lunch you don't eat. But you can have liquids and so forth and so on. Normally one of the vows, lay vows, is no sexual misconduct. In this case, there's no sexual conduct whatsoever. So that's for 24 hours. And there's a couple of other things which, if you take the precepts, I'm sure Geshe-la will mention it, right? And Geshe-la will be here tomorrow to give the precepts, because someone, at least one person, has signed up who has never taken precepts before. Because precepts, the first time you take precepts, it has to be given to you by a qualified master who has a lineage, right? This goes back to the Buddha's time. So 2,600 years, there's a lineage of people, giving precepts, right? Passes down from master to disciple. So Geshe-la is one of those people who holds that lineage. And so he can give the precepts. And after that, if you've taken precepts once already, like me, I won't come here at 6 o'clock tomorrow because I live an hour away. But I can take it at home by myself, right? So like that. Once you've taken it from a teacher, you can take it by yourself. So the reason for the precepts is that living in the vow, any vows, right, it has incredible benefit, right? So they say that normally if you are, if you're not in the vow, just living, or I'm spending a lot of time here, but if you're living without vows, right, like an ordinary being, right, without vows, you do some positive things, you do some negative things, so there's, you're creating positive causes for positive results, you do some negative things, you're creating causes for some negative results, and most of the time you're doing neutral things, right? It's neither positive nor negative, like I'm driving down the highway, it's neither positive nor negative, right? They say that if you're living with vows, then all your actions multiply, the merit multiplies. Right? So what used to be just a little bit positive comes of great merit. Right? Of course, the converse is also true if you break your vow. But the other thing also is that even neutral things actually have a positive, become positive, which is the interesting thing. Rinpoche said that once. Even neutral things become positive. So that's why Rinpoche, you know Rinpoche? Rinpoche advises all his students to take vows, if they can, right? Because that means like your every second of the day you are creating merit, right? Of course, if you engage in negative behavior, that has great, proportionately great repercussions, right? Rather than, but if you're taking vows, then you are committing to not do negative things, right? So anyway, so that includes, for example, lay vows, you know, like those of us who have lay vows and other vows. Of course, if you're taking bodhisattva vows, those are, people forget about those, you take pratimoksha vows, certain Dharma practices or something, you're taking a bodhisattva vow, right? Well, bodhisattva vows have you can look it up, a pretty long list of things that you're supposed to do. Actively, help others, what to do to help others and so forth and so on, right? So there are vows that, many vows that are there. But for tomorrow at least, you only living in the vows for a day, which is really easy to do. But it has great potential, great benefit, especially because you're doing it on a day that is of such, the merit multiplies a million times or 10 million times. I don't remember. Rinpoche says unbelievable, he says, amounts of merit, right? So if you can, at 6 o'clock, come and take precept, or if you've already taken precepts, take it at home, and or come at 7 to practice with Geshe-la. One other thing I will tell you is that, Rinpoche, when we do retreats with Rinpoche, Rinpoche a lot of times comes down, and Joanna will know because she goes there along with me and others. Rinpoche will come down at we take precepts every day, right? So for 2 weeks, you take precepts every day. And they're given out at, 5:15 or whatever it is in the morning. So you get up at 4:45, traipse down to the place and you do that. And Rinpoche will show up at, 5:30 in the morning, sometimes, a lot of times, but he doesn't need to. I mean, he doesn't need to take precepts. He lives in precepts. I mean, he has his monastic vows anyway, so he's got his precepts. But the reason he does it is out of his own infinite compassion, because he knows that those of us who are his students consider him our guru, right? So to take precepts with the guru is of incredible benefit, right? Because, those of us who consider him our guru is equivalent to be like the Buddha, right? When you're taking a spiritual teacher class, you know that, right? So that's why he comes down, is to be, not because he's showing off or he needs to, but it's because because the benefit to his students is so great, right? So why am I mentioning this? Because just to kind of tell you the kind of importance that precepts and a day like tomorrow and doing in a group yoga tomorrow, why it's so help, so beneficial, right? Anyway, okay. I think of, what do you call it? Whip that dog, I don't know, whatever. I can't, anyway. Okay. So I mentioned that, and good. So let's, last time I didn't do a very good job of telling you about mandala offerings. I discovered when I went home, I kind of realized that I kind of had just, blasted through it, and I really didn't. And so what I wanted to you remember mandala offerings, right? Mount Meru, sun and the moon, and we offer it to the Buddhas, right? So, I wanted to read to you. So, in the Lam Rim, it mentions that most important thing is to do the visualization as best as you can. Right? The more you can, the better you can visualize. Remember, in mandala offering, we're offering the entire universe to the Buddhas, right? Everything that's of value to us, our virtue, our virtue from our past, present, future lives, everything that we hold dear, right? Everything that we consider beautiful, right? Parafalls, garlands, precious, perfume, this is the old classical scriptures, that's what they mention, right? So we offer all those things, gardens, water, fountains, river, all these things, beautiful lakes, everything we offer to the Buddhas, right? And it's important to visualize this beautiful realm, that we're creating in our mind and we're offering it to them, right? And it mentions in the Lam Rim, the great stages on the path to enlightenment, that the more we can visualize it, the more benefit we gain. Right? Because it's for our own benefit. It's not for the Buddha's benefit. They don't need the benefit, really. They've already had it. So it's for our own sake, right? And so it mentions, so the visualization is visualize as best as you can, right? And I wanted to mention to you, I dug up this teaching by Rinpoche about mandala offerings. Right? So I'll just read you a couple of paragraphs, right? So that way you get a sense of what it's like, what it's about, right? Much better than I could explain. So he says, if we visualize the mandala offering as beautiful as possible, you can visualize it as a pure realm, having the highest quality of enjoyments. Then it is very good for the mind. Psychologically, it helps the mind that has too much miserliness, too much attachment in the material possessions. That mind is, this is a transcript, so it's a little, the sentences don't quite work. That mind is an uncomfortable mind, a suffering mind. So the objects of the miserliness, the objects of attachment, as best as possible, the greatest quality as you can, visualize them. So we're offering to the Buddhas all our objects of attachment, right? Because those are the things we value, actually, because we're ordinary beings, right? Then, when you offer it, you renounce, completely dedicating from the heart all the merit to the holy objects to the merit field. From the heart, you offer to the merit field. Then that is the practice. Without being attached, without being miserly, from the heart offering, making complete determination, offering like this to the holy objects, the merit field. This is the practice of renouncing attachment. It is the method to diminish and control attachment and miserliness. When you completely decided in the heart that what you offer is Guru Shakyamuni Buddha's, it is Guru Shakyamuni Buddha's. Think, it is no longer mine. After you offer your body, material possessions, in that mandala, all your material possessions, everything, all the great enjoyments in every continent, the realm of the gods, where they have incredible great enjoyments, material possessions, jewels, unbelievable. So sincerely offer like this. This is this essential method for controlling and diminishing miserliness and attachment. This is the purification. Doing this mandala offering is a powerful method to purify the unsubdued mind of attachment. As you don't have any possession, because you're offering it to the Buddhas, right? So you're renouncing all these objects, right? So then you don't have any of these possessions anymore. So as you don't have any possessions, any body, any material possessions, you don't have clinging to those objects. So it helps to stop from anger arising. Many times we develop anger, pride, jealousy, those minds, because of attachment to our body, our material possessions, absolutely believing this is mine. So, like that, right? So there's a lot of things that are built in to the mandala offering. Okay. So then, as I said, today we are going to actually do the practice, right? So what we're going to do is we'll do a short breathing meditation, right? And do most of you, some of you, have the Shakyamuni Buddha's, the pamphlet, the booklet that she is holding up? If not, if you have the prayer book in front of you, it's on page 169. So we'll do this practice. But before that, we'll do get our mind in gear. We will do a short breathing meditation, concentration meditation. By the way, before we start the practice, if people have any questions about the practice, about what we've been discussing, confusion, no. Okay. Maybe there will be, hopefully, after we do it. Okay. So if you haven't meditated before, remember just the most important thing is to keep the back straight, but with a natural curvature. If you have been coming to class, then you can take the sevenfold Vairochana posture. You know what that is. will set our motivation. How extremely lucky I am that I have not died yet. I'm especially lucky that my death did not occur last night or today. Consequently, how wonderful and fortunate it is that today I'm still a human being, a state that is extremely rare. But this is not all. I have a perfect human body, which is also extremely rare. I have met the virtuous friend who reveals the unmistakable complete path to enlightenment, who is extremely difficult to meet. And I have met the Buddha Dharma, which is also extremely difficult to meet. Given that I have met all of these extraordinarily fortunate circumstances, I should not waste my life in any way. I should make my life as useful as possible for infinite other sentient beings. Their peace and happiness depends upon me, and my happiness is only received from their kindness. Insofar as my life fulfills the greatest usefulness for other sentient beings, it becomes the means to achieve success and happiness for myself as well. The purpose of my life is to free all sentient beings from suffering and its causes, negative karma and disturbing thoughts, and to lead them not only to the ultimate happiness of self-liberation, but to the peerless happiness of enlightenment as well. This is my responsibility. I am responsible for the happiness of all sentient beings. Why? Because whether my actions are helpful or harmful to them depends completely on my own mind, on whether I have compassion or not. By generating compassion immediately, I therefore benefit numberless other sentient beings. At the very least, I do not harm them. The ultimate purpose of my life is to work perfectly for others. In order to fulfill that purpose, it is necessary for me to achieve the state of full enlightenment, omniscient mind, and in order to do that, I must actualize the path to enlightenment. Therefore, I'm going to do the ordinary actions and virtuous actions. From the two types of motivation, the causal motivation and the motivation in the moment, this motivation is causal. It becomes the best virtuous motivation for transforming all my actions from this moment on. It is the best cause of happiness, and its result is highest full enlightenment. So let's really make an effort and try to bring that motivation that our ultimate purpose in this life is to be as beneficial as possible for all beings, not just our friends and people we love, but for strangers and maybe even people we detest. Buddhist, non-Buddhist alike. May all my actions become only causes for me to achieve enlightenment and to bring all sentient beings to enlightenment as quickly as possible. So imagine in front of us, we are, normally we would make the offerings now. But we can visualize the offerings at the moment instead of doing them physically. So imagine we have purified the place and cleaned the altar. And so we offer, you know, using water bowls. So left to right, we offer water to wash the feet of the Buddhas because we're inviting them to come in our presence, the merit field, right? So we're inviting them to our house. We offer them water to wash their water to drink, water to wash their feet, flowers, incense, light, perfume, food, and music. So we offer all these in the form of water bowls to the Buddhas. So normally we would do this on our altar, but today we're just doing it through our visualization. So then to sit down in front of our altar, or in our case we have an altar behind me, so to sit down, to start our meditation, we do three prostrations, and this is what Rinpoche says. He says, prostrate three times while reciting the following mantra. That is Manjushri's mantra. We will do it in a minute. Reciting this mantra multiplies the benefit of each prostration by 1,000 times and enables one to actualize the path of seeing in this lifetime. The physical action of prostrating purifies mainly the negative karmas of the body. The verbal action of reciting the mantra exalts the Buddhas by declaring their supreme power and knowledge. It purifies the negative karmas of speech. The mental action of remembering the supreme power and knowledge of the Buddhas arouses faith. It purifies the negative karmas of the mind. So remember what Rinpoche's instructions for prostrations were. So when we do the prostration, imagine that all the countless bodies we have had for beginningless time, and we will have in the future, all those bodies in the form of human bodies prostrate with us, right? So an infinite number of bodies along with our own prostrate with us, and we're offering, we're paying homage to the Buddhas with all those bodies, right? So as we prostrate, we will do the mantra. You know, those of you who don't know the mantra, you can read it from the text, but it's Manjushri's mantra, so it goes, so we'll do it three times. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye Soha. So let's do the prostration three times and we will do the mantra with it.
And if you can't do it physically, your knees hurt or back is hurt, whatever, you can visualize the prostration, right? And but really visualize it going down on the ground and coming back up, and you can do the mantra. Om Namo Manjushri. 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 Om Namo Manjushri
Samanjusha, of course, is the Buddha of wisdom, right? So since this practice includes meditation on the Lam Rim, we need the blessings of the Buddha of wisdom to be able to understand the teachings, to be able to actualize the teachings. And so here you can, if you have time, you can do the 35 confession down. I can never remember the full name, but anyway, 35 confession Buddhas, you know, the downfalls, something. So here, this is where you can do it if you have time, right? There's 35 Buddhas and you do 3 prostrations each for each Buddha, right? Otherwise, like today, we're going to continue with the Guru Shakyamuni Buddha mantra, right? This is Shakyamuni Buddha's full mantra. So we'll do it in English first once, and then we'll do it in Sanskrit. I mean, in Tibetan. And I'll do the chant slowly, so you don't never fear. To the Guru, Founder, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfectly completed Buddha, glorious conqueror, Shakyamuni Buddha, I prostrate, make offerings, and go for refuge. Please grant me your blessings. So at this point, you should think about, you know, what it means to you about refuge, what it means to take refuge, right? So you can engender faith and gratitude to the Buddhas. So we'll do the prayer now. Lama don pa chun den de de jin shak pa ra chun pa yang dak pa so ke sang ge pel ge wa shak ge tu pa la chak sa la chur du kap su chi wo jin gi lap tu so. Is that too fast? Yes, I'll slow it down. Lama dun pa chum den de de jin shek pa ra chum pa yang dak pa suk pe sang e pel ge wa shak ya tu pa the place. Just imagine that this is not just a ordinary place with tables and chairs and floors, but imagine that it's a kind of like a rainbow, you know, just like a pure land almost, right? So it's not an ordinary world, but it's like a different plane, you know. And beautiful flowers, lakes like that, and it's like a rainbow, you know, made of rainbows like that. So it's a transcendent place like that, right? Everywhere may the ground be pure, free of the roughness of pebbles and so forth. May it be in the nature of lapis lazuli and as smooth as the palm of one's hand. So that's just a beautiful place, you know. So we kind of transform this ordinary place into a place where the Buddhas would reside. So then we bless the offerings that we have, set out on our altar. And this is the offering cloud mantra. When it is said, blesses and multiplies the offerings countless times, right? So remember to accumulate merit and purify obstacles, which is necessary, right, to make any spiritual progress, like the seed that needs rain and sun and fertile soil, right? So our spiritual progress requires the causes, which is, accumulating merit and purifying obstacles. So when we make the offerings of the seven water bowls, they're not just seven bowls of water, but they're extensive offerings. We're transforming it into like extensive offerings, right? So this is a mantra in Sanskrit for that. And as I've mentioned before, why we do certain mantras in Sanskrit and, so forth, because it has the power of the mantra, because there's so many masters for the last 2,000 years who have been speaking this exact same words, right? So there's special power in these mantras. So I'll go slowly. Om Namo Bhagavate Vajrasara Pramardhane Tathagataya Arate Samyak Sambhudaya Tayata Om Vajre Vajre Mahavajre Mahateja Vajre Mahavidya Vajre Mahabodhi Chita Vajre Mahabodhi Mandupasam Kramana Vajre Sarva karma avarana vishodhana vajre soha. Om namo bhagavate vajrasara pramardhane tathagataya arate samyak sambuddhaya tayata om vajre vajre ma vajre ma teja vajre ma vidya vajre ma bodhicitta vajre ma bodhi mandopasam kramana vajre sarva karma avarana vishodhana vajre soha. Om namo bhagavate vajrasara pramardhane tathagataya arate samyak sambuddhaya tayata om vajre vajre ma vajre ma teja vajre ma bodhicitta vajre ma bodhi mando. Did I miss it? Mahabodhi mandupasam kramana vajre sarva karma avarana vishodhana vajre soha. Just imagine that all the offerings have multiplied infinite times and they're, beautiful offerings that fill up the sky like that. So by the power of the truth of the three sublime ones, the blessings of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the great wealth of the completed two collections, and the sphere of phenomena being pure and inconceivable, may these piles of clouds of offerings arising through transformation by the Bodhisattvas, Arya, Samantabhadra, Manjushri, and so forth, unimaginable and inexhaustible, equaling the sky, arise, and the eyes of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions be received. We can't, we're ordinary beings. We can't make offerings like like the Bodhisattvas can, right? Because of the great power of their minds. So that's why we say we offer like Arya, Samantabhadra, and Manjushri, just like they did. We offer just like they did. Even though we can't do it in our current form, we have the motivation just like they did. We offer just like them. So now we do the visualization. So I'll read and you can close your eyes and just try to follow along and do the best you can. And over time, as I said, it gets easier and easier. So the level of your forehead, about 2 meters, 6 feet in front of you, is a large golden throne. It is beautifully adorned with jewels and supported at each corner by a pair of snow lions, signifying the Buddha's quality of fearlessness. On the throne is a fully developed lotus, signifying his holy body and mind, which are unstained by the shortcomings of samsara. And on that lotus are sun and full moon discs. The sun signifies wisdom, and the moon signifies the method. The two together signify the unification of no more learning, and the Buddha sitting on them signifies the achievement of this unification. Upon the lotus, sun and moon is seated Shakyamuni Buddha, who has achieved the perfect cessation of all suffering and obscurations, and has attained all perfect realizations. He is the manifestation of the omniscient mind of all the Buddhas, the ultimate Guru. He is inseparable from your root Guru, who shows the unmistaken path and is bound with infinite compassion to you and to all sentient beings. Shakyamuni Buddha's body in the nature of golden light is very magnificent. This is actually important. His body isn't just like a normal body. It's like made of rainbow light or golden light, because, you know, his body is not like ours, right? It's a very subtle body. So his body in the nature of golden light is very magnificent, and he wears the three robes of a monk. His face is beautiful and has a loving smile. His compassionate eyes look toward you, but simultaneously encompass all sentient beings. His mind, free of all judgmental or critical thoughts, he accepts you fully. His eyes are long, narrow, and fine. His gaze is very peaceful. His eyes are half closed, signifying that the holy mind is in meditative equipoise in the sky of emptiness, and half opened, signifying that the holy mind, while in meditative equipoise, is at the same time out of compassion working for sentient beings. His lips are red, signifying he reveals the Dharma to others out of compassion. His hair is blue-black. Each hair individually curls to the right. On the crown of his head is a crown pinnacle. The palm of his right hand rests on his right knee, the middle finger touching the moon cushion, symbolizing his great control over desire. His left hand rests in his lap in the mudra of meditation, symbolizing he has overcome all disturbing attitudes. In his left hand, he's holding a bowl filled with nectar. His body is in the Vajra posture, signifying that he has destroyed the Mara of the Lord of Death. Thus he has destroyed his the four Maras. Those are the overcoming desire, overcoming disturbing attitudes, all those things. And he sits peacefully in the center of interlaced beams of light, signifying that he works for sentient beings with whatever means will benefit them. So let's stabilize that visualization just for a few moments, as best as we can. The most important thing being that he to see his gaze, the loving and compassionate nature towards us and all beings. Because the Buddha, one of the qualities of the Buddhas is that they see all beings as, quote, attractive. Here, attractive doesn't mean physical attraction, attractiveness, but rather that all beings are beautiful inside, equally beautiful, regardless of their outward appearance or their form, or how deluded their minds might be. So, regardless of how we think we are, the Buddha thinks we are perfect like that. So that's why he has a smile on his face and a compassionate gaze at us. Each feature of his holy body represents aspect of his omniscient mind and so forth, his inner attainments. Each feature also demonstrates the causes, the merit that was collected in the past. No matter how much one looks at the Buddha, one never feels satiated. The supreme refuge, the Buddha, encompasses the Guru, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. From his holy body, beams are emitted in all 10 directions. Numberless manifestations of Shakyamuni Buddha are carried on each beam to ripen infinite sentient beings. So the beams go out to all the numberless sentient beings. Looking at me with compassionate eyes, Shakyamuni Buddha says, son or daughter of the lineage, if you want to be liberated from the suffering of samsara, I will guide you. He happily promises this and frees me from the breathless state. So then we'll do the So that's the visualization of the Buddha. So we bring the Buddha in our presence, or we invite him to come to our presence. And now we'll do the visualization for the merit field. Actually, before that, we just think just quickly about what it means to take refuge. Surround me are seated infinite father and mother sentient beings. They are completely intoxicated with the unimaginable infinite sufferings of each of the six realms. They are wide-eyed, desperately looking for refuge, pitifully calling. Think. Continuously circling in samsara's six realms, I have been tormented by suffering during beginningless rebirth until now. I have still not found the opportunity to be liberated from this. Fortunately, this time I have received the perfect human body. Because of my good fortune, I have met the most sublime teaching, the Buddha Dharma, and the founder, Shakyamuni Buddha. I have no certainty that I will not die today. My death could happen even today. If I should die today, I would have no freedom to choose the realm in which I would be reborn. I could fall down the precipice into one of the realms of the evil migratory beings. I should think carefully about whether I would be able to bear those sufferings for even 1 second. Although it is extremely unlikely, if I were to achieve the body of a deva, a god, or a human, I would still be ceaselessly tormented by many hundreds of sufferings, such as rebirth, old age, sickness, death, dissatisfaction, anxiety, lack of fulfillment, problems in our relationships, and so forth. And after that, I would again fall down into the lower realms. There is nothing to trust about being in the upper realms. Thus, during this one time that I have obtained a perfect human body with freedoms and richnesses, I am being guided by the sublime virtuous friend who reveals the path, and I have the wisdom to discriminate between the shortcomings of samsara and the benefits of liberation. Therefore, I should quickly achieve liberation from this terrifying samsara. Yet, to liberate only myself from samsara is not at all sufficient. This is not the meaning of my life. Numberless sentient beings equaling the limitless sky are wandering in the suffering states of samsara. They have all been my fathers and mothers, in other lives, that is. Therefore, I must liberate them and lead them to the peerless happiness of full enlightenment. Who is the refuge and guide who liberates from the great oceans of beginningless samsara? There is no other except the three sublime ones. Therefore, together I and each and every migratory being equaling the sky go for refuge to the Guru Triple Gem, the Founder, the Fully Enlightened One, the Dharma, the scriptural understanding and realizations, and the Sangha, the Transcendental Assembly. So with our attitude of refuge, we do the refuge prayer. So we'll recite it three times. So this is, you know the English version, so we'll just do the Sanskrit one. Namo Gurubhye, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. So every time we do the recitation, it pleases the refuge object. Shakyamuni Buddha, nectar flows down from his holy body and enters our own body and mind, and into the body and mind of every sentient beings. So that's important to visualize this as we do this refuge prayer. Namo Gurubhye, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Gurubhye, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Sanghaya. So the nectar purifies completely all disease, harm from spirits, obstacles to your lifespan, negative karmas, obscurations accumulated by you and by other sentient beings, and especially all the vices accumulated in the relationship with the Guru Triple Gem. The nectar fully develops all positive qualities, life, merit, and scriptural understanding and realizations of the Guru Triple Gem in our mind and in the minds of others. With this nectar, you and all other sentient beings enter under the guidance of the Guru Triple Gem. So it's important that every one of these, to really feel, try to, you know, in our minds, to really bring that feeling as best as we can that we have received the blessings of the Buddhas, that we've purified our obstacles, that it develops our good qualities, what it says here, that we are truly under their guidance, because that's how we make the connection if we really try to bring that feeling to mind. it opens our hearts to all their blessings. These aren't just words. So then we'll do the four immeasurable thoughts. So I will read it and you can, well, we can read it together. This is not quite the same for immeasurable thoughts that we normally do, you know, where we normally say, may all beings have equanimity, may all beings have, you know, free of suffering, blah, blah, blah. This one actually, as you'll see, it's an active wish. It's not just, oh, I wish that everybody were free of, you know, suffering, right? This is saying, not only do I wish them to be free of suffering, I myself will take on the responsibility. See, that's a very big difference, right? So this is a part of the Bodhisattva vows kind of, you know, responsibility that we take on. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were able to be abide in equanimity, free of hatred and attachment. May they abide in equanimity. I myself will cause them to abide in equanimity. Please, Guru Buddha, grant me blessings to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the cause of happiness. May they have happiness and its causes. I myself will cause them to have happiness and its causes. Please, Guru Buddha, grant me blessings to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free of suffering and its causes. May they be free of suffering and its causes. I myself will cause them to be free of suffering and its causes. Please, Guru Buddha, grant me blessings to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from the happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. May they never be separated from these. I myself will cause them never to be separated from this. Please, Guru Buddha, grant me blessings to be able to do this. In particular, I must achieve enlightenment quickly in order to free all the numberless kind mother sentient beings from the unimaginable oceans of samsaric suffering and cause of suffering and lead them to peerless full enlightenment. For this purpose, I'm going to meditate on the stages of the path to enlightenment. So it's really important to, when we're doing this practice, whatever practice we're doing, however little or small, to always have this bodhicitta attitude. May they have be free of suffering. That I take on this responsibility. You know, that I will help them, right? So, it has great positive benefit. Okay, so now we'll do the seven limb prayer that you have heard so much about. So first, you know, we do the prostrations. That, you know, again, now we're not doing prostrations physically, you'll be happy to know, but we're doing it mentally, right? And so again, mentally we make prostrations with as many bodies as we, you know, that we can think of. You know, Grimpache says, for example, think that the body is like as big as a mountain, right? It's like a big mountain prostrating, you know, covering the whole earth. And the reason he says this is because covering all the atoms, right? Because on each atom or on each molecule or whatever is a being, right? So you, when you're prostrating, you're basically taking all of them with you, right? Like that, right? So that's the, again, the bodhicitta attitude built into the prostration, right? So we do this visualization like that. So with all our bodies, we do this, and we can also imagine that all other beings are prostrating with us. We're leading them, right? Because we've taken on the responsibility, right, to lead them away from suffering. So reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. So it ceases all obscurations of body, speech, and mind and achieves the infinite qualities of the holy body, speech, and mind of the Buddhas. This limb is a specific remedy to pride. I present clouds of every type of offering actually offered and mentally transformed. So Pabongka Rinpoche says, you know, so these are like supreme offerings that we can offer, right? So like, for example, upholding the Dharma, developing the wish for supreme enlightenment, utilizing one's studies by putting them into practice, one's root virtue transformed into offering material. So you can imagine your root for all your root virtues that you hold so dear, or yeah, virtues that, you know, spiritual, root virtues are, you know, virtues in our spiritual path, right? So we offer them, right, to all the Buddhas. So we mentally transform them and we just offer them to all the Buddhas. So one is able to have enjoyments as limitless as sky. This is the specific remedy to miserliness. Then the confession. I confess all negative actions accumulated since beginning this time. So you can imagine how many negative actions we have committed since beginning this time. I mean, there's nothing we have not done, as one teacher once said. Whatever most heinous thing you can think of, we've done it. Right? So, many times, actually, not just once. So we confess all those actions, however little or big, right? So what this ceases the two obscurations. The two obscurations are obscurations to liberation and obscurations to omniscience. So obscuration and liberation are things like, anger, the poisons, right? Anger, attachment, ignorance. Those are obscurations to liberation. Delusions, mental delusions. And obscurations to omniscience are the seeds, you know, because arhats, for example, have removed obscurations to liberation. But they still have the seeds in their mind. That's why they're not Buddhas yet, right? So they work for however many great eons to remove the seeds, which are habits, really. That's what it is, right? To remove the seeds, and then they, you know, go through the 10 bhumis to become a Buddha. So that's what it means by the two obscurations. Obscurations to liberation, obscurations to omniscience. So one ceases, with this confession, one ceases there are two obscurations. This is the specific remedy to negative karma and the disturbing thoughts, including the three poisonous minds, you know, attachment, anger, ignorance, the three main problems that we have, delusions that we have. And then the next limb, which is rejoicing, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. So we can rejoice over our past lives virtue, that you can gauge, all our past lives' virtue, rejoice over our present life's virtues, and then rejoice over the virtue of others, friends, enemies, and strangers. So, and Rinpoche says to always stop for a bit here, after, at the rejoicing limb, right? Because it's so important to rejoice in not just our actions, because we do a lot of good things, you know, but to rejoice in all of the actions of beings around us, and rejoice in the actions of all the beings all over the world, you know, Buddhist, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, whatever they are, you know. There's so many who are doing so many great things, you know, helping people. You know, think about, you know, those people on the island of Lesbos helping all the Syrian migrants, you know, every single day, rescuing them. So all those little deeds and great deeds, they all add up, right? So it's a great thing to rejoice in so many efforts, so many people are doing. And then rejoice, of course, in all the activities of the Buddhas, their great compassionate natures. that they continue to guide us, our teachers who continue to live among us and guide us, because they don't really need to be here, you know. They could live their life on their own, probably happier. So like that, right? So there's so much to rejoice. So he, Rinpoche says, always to take a moment here and rejoice. Make the effort. So the benefit is one achieves the holy body of the Buddha, which possesses all beauty and has nothing to dislike. This is the specific remedy to jealousy. Rejoicing is a specific remedy to jealousy. And then we beseech, please remain until samsara ends. Right? So continue to live with us, among us, so that we can, you know, be guided by you. So at this point, visualize, so you can visualize in your mind as I read this, visualize offering a golden throne supported by 8 snow lions. So we offer it to the Buddhas. So the benefit is one achieves the Vajra holy body of the Buddha. This limb purifies having disturbed the Guru Buddha's holy mind and the karmic obscurations that prevent meeting the Buddha. After you have offered the throne, it absorbs into the Buddha's throne. Then we please turn the wheel of Dharma for all sentient beings. Now visualize offering a Dharma chakra. This is just a wheel with 8 spokes. This is one of the auspicious symbols in Buddhism. So the benefit is one achieves the Buddha's holy speech, the tune of the Dharma. You know, the one of the Buddha's qualities is when he speaks, when or he or she speaks. It's like, you know, one of the qualities is that whoever is listening, they hear it in their own language, kind of like that, right? But it's also like a beautiful melody, you know, like a melody, like a song, you know. So that's what it means here, is one achieves the Buddha's holy speech, the tune of the Dharma, which has infinite qualities. One is guided in all lifetimes. This limb is a special, inconceivable cause for meeting the holy Dharma again in the future. It is a specific remedy to ignorance and avoiding the Dharma. So this is how we, you know, continue to keep the relationship with our teachers and the Buddhas, right? So that, you know, when this life is over, the next life we will again come into contact with the Dharma, with qualified teachers, with the Buddha, so we can keep making progress, right? And helping others, helping ourselves and helping others. So that's why this limb is so important. And then finally, dedication. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the great enlightenment. This limb plants the seed in the mind to achieve all the qualities of the Buddha. It is a specific remedy to heresy. Think that the merit field has accepted your prayer and your offerings. So this is actually important. So just like when we visualize that the Shakyamuni, you know, the Buddha is kind and he's looking, gazing kindly at us with a compassionate, you know, gaze, etc. It's important that we think that the Buddhas have, the merit field has accepted our prayer. They're very happy with our practice. They're very happy with our offerings. They're very pleased with us. Maybe they're even smiling at us like that, right? So we have to make it as real as possible to us, right? So, because then it becomes real to us, to, you know, in our own minds. Okay, and then we'll offer the mandala. So Rinpoche says, why offer the mandala? So one of the best means of accumulating inconceivable extensive merits in the shortest time is the mandala offering practice. in the very moment of offering the mandala, one collects inconceivable merits. By visualizing the entire universe and all the offerings on the mandala base. So the mandala normally, by the way, you may have seen, well, if you come tomorrow, you will see. See, there's another reason to come tomorrow. At 7 o'clock. You will see the nuns, and maybe Geshe Sangpo. I'm not sure if Geshe Sangpo will be doing it or not, but anyway, you'll see the nuns. You know, they have the mandala, they have the base, and they have the rice, and then there's seven heaps. So there's a whole practice of the mandala and the symbolism, right? We're not doing that, right? So so you'll see it tomorrow if you come. You do it clockwise with your elbow, and then you do counterclockwise. There's a whole, thing to it. So we're not doing that, but that's what it means. You know, the seven continents and all this other stuff is built into that practice. So, let's see. So visualizing the entire universe and all the offerings on the mandala base. That's what it means by the base. It's the base of the actual, the thing. Because in a past life he offered sand grains visualized as gold in the begging bowl of the past Buddha, King Ashoka was able to build 10 million stupas in one day. By offering the mandala on this base, you receive an unbelievable amount of merit, much more than King Ashoka received, because you will collect extensive merit of having actually offered the entire universe. As Lama Tsongkhapa mentioned, the two essential points of the mandala offering meditation are to visualize one, many and clearly. That's right. This is why it's important to visualize, as best as we can, many and clearly. Therefore, you should visualize mandalas of the highest, richest quality in as many as possible, filling the whole sky. The fully ordained nun Gelongma Palmo accumulated much merit through offering mandalas and was able to accomplish the Buddha of compassion. And also Lama Tsongkhapa was able to realize the unmistakable and right view after having offered many hundreds and thousands of mandalas. This is actually true. But anyway, that's another story. So we'll do the short mandala offering, which is here, but, Joanna brought up a really good point last time, and that Lama Yeshe had definitely said that we should try to do the inner mandala offering as well, so I think we should try to do that, and which is short mandala offering. Where is inner mandala offering? Oh, here we go. Bottom of page 27. Okay, in the prayer book. So that has both the short mandala offering. So the short mandala offering is the external mandala offering, right? We're offering the continents and so forth and so on. The inner mandala offering is actually, we're offering all of our obstacles, all our delusions, all our, everything that holds us back. Right? So, like that. I read somewhere that it's kind of like the environmental, offering all the environmental obstacles, and then there's you're offering all the inner obstacles. Like that, right? So we'll do page 27. Let's see, we'll do it in English first, and then we'll do it in Tibetan, just so you know kind of how to do it, right? I think most of you have heard it in Tibetan anyway, probably by now, but anyway, we'll do it first in English. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So imagine that, what we're offering is not just an ordinary universe, right? This is transformed in our mind into a transcendental universe, right? So imagine, beautiful gardens, lakes, beautiful trees, trees with wish-granting jewels. That's how the wheel-turning kings, that's how they offer, they say. Trees with wish-granting jewels, beautiful birds, when they sing, it's like the sound of the Dharma, When the when the rivers, you know, the brooks, the babbling brooks, the, you know, it has the same sound of the Dharma, you know, like that. So that's what we're offering. And then the inner mandala. The objects of my attachment, aversion, ignorance, friends, enemies, strangers, my body, wealth, and enjoyments. Without any sense of loss, I offer this collection. Please accept it with pleasure and bless me with freedom from the three poisons. So let's do it in Tibetan. Saji Poki Jukshing Meto Tram Rira Plingji Nide Genpa practice. So after we do the mandala offering, it's the important to make a prayer to the Buddhas for what we want them to help us with, right? How, what is it that we want to achieve, right? So those are the three great purposes it talks about, a prayer of the three great purposes. So we'll do it in English. I prostrate and go for refuge to the Guru and the three precious gems. Please bless my mind. I'm requesting you to immediately pacify all the wrong conceptions from incorrect devotion to the Guru up to the subtle dual view of the white, red, and dark visions that exist in the mind and the minds of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to immediately generate all the right realizations from Guru devotion up to enlightenment in my mind and the mind of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to pacify all outer and inner obstacles to actualizing the entire graduated path to enlightenment in my mind and all minds of other sentient beings. So we'll do it two more times. I prostrate and go for refuge to the Guru and the three precious gems. Please bless my mind. I'm requesting it to immediately pacify all the wrong conceptions from incorrect devotion to the Guru up to the subtle dual view of the white, red, and dark visions that exist in my mind and the minds of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to immediately generate all the right realizations from Guru devotion up to the enlightenment in my mind and the mind of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to pacify all outer and inner obstacles to actualizing the either group path to enlightenment in my mind and all minds of, minds of all other sentient beings. I prostrate and go for refuge to the Guru and the three precious gems. Please bless my mind. I'm requesting you to immediately pacify all the wrong conceptions for incorrect devotion to the Guru up to the subtle dual view of the white, red, and dark visions that exist in my mind and the minds of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to immediately generate all the right realizations from Guru devotion up to enlightenment in my mind and minds of all mother sentient beings. I'm requesting you to pacify all outer and inner obstacles through actualizing the entire path to enlightenment, my mind and all minds of all mother sentient beings. So this prayer, I don't know if you've made any sense about the subtle dual view of the white, red, and dark visions. This is from a tantric point of view, right? This is the red, white, red, and dark visions are what one sees at the time of, you know, actualizing a clear light of death, right? Or if you are so fortunate to, you know, reach enlightenment before the time of death, then you also can, you know, at various practices, you can actually see the same visions, right? So that's what it comes to.
So the wording in the prayer book is somewhat different from what you read.
Right. Okay. It's hard to say. Let me see. I don't know. What page are you on?
178.
It might be the sutra version.
Well, for instance, it says the three precious rare sublime jewels.
Yeah. So I was going to say that there's a sutra version of this, because if you don't want to do the tantric version because you don't have a particular, it doesn't make a lot of sense. If you look in the booklet, you know, at the end of the practice, it has the same prayer, but in the sutra form. So it talks about it without the red and dark visions and all that stuff, right? Because it's less esoteric then. Right? So you can do that, which is just as good, right? But this is basically what we're trying to achieve. These are our spiritual goals, right? So we make this heartfelt prayer, right? So we really try to make it as heartfelt as possible. So then we end with Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Nidhyatayami. Okay. So then comes more specific requests. Well, just general requests now. Guru Vajadhara, who encompasses all three objects of refuge, taking the form of virtuous friend in whatever way, subdues and granting common and sublime realizations. To you, kind gurus, I make requests, whose holy body is created by millions of virtues and goodness, whose holy speech fulfills the wishes of all sentient beings, whose holy mind sees every existence exactly. At the holy feet of the principle of the Sakyas, I make requests by making offerings and requests with devotion to the highest sublime field of merit. You, the Savior, who are the sole source of all my happiness and goodness, please grant me blessings and guide me with your pleased holy mind. So, we're actually, believe it or not, almost at the end. So we're not going to, so normally we would do the graded path, you know, the meditation, the graded path to enlightenment, you know, at this point. But we're out of time, so we're not going to do it today. But to finish, what we'll do is go to, at the end of that graded path, you know, you see the request to descend to the crown. So we ask the Buddha to absorb within us, right? So we become like the Buddhas. So we go there. So, glorious and precious root guru, please abide in the lotus and moon seat on my crown, and taking care of me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your holy body, speech, and mind. And at this point, you would do the mantra recitation for a while, you know? So, we'll do this next time, right? So, I mean, I'm just kind of skipping through this today. So tayatao mune mune mahamune soa. So how many times do we do that? And then we do the dedications, right? So maybe today we'll just do the dedications just the one, the first page, right? Because it has His Holiness's dedication as well. long life preserve, that's right. As a result of all my merits of the three times, the merits of the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, ascension beings, may the altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment be generated in my mind and the minds of all sentient beings without even a second's delay. And may that altruistic wish which has been generated be increased. Whatever suffering sentient beings experience, may it ripen on me. Whatever merit and resulting happiness have accumulated, may it ripen upon others. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and goodness. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. And the one last verse. May the glorious Guru's lives be long and stable. May all beings equaling the extent of space of happiness. May I and others without exception accumulate merit and purify negativities. And may we be blessed to quickly attain Buddhahood. So like that, right? So so what I would suggest is that during the week, well, first of all, come tomorrow again, if I haven't said it enough. Come tomorrow and do it with Geshe-la, which is going to be of great benefit. And during the week, if you could, you know, try to do the practice, you know. I mean, do the best you can, right? And as I said, as you'll find out, the visual, you know, I spent a lot, you know, I read every single word, right? But, you know, after a couple of weeks, you don't need to read the, you know, the visualization comes, right? The refuge, you don't have to go through every word to bring refuge, you know, so it becomes, you know, so you really start doing the, you know, practice and not so much of the words, right? So it actually, what I'm trying to say is, it's not really as long as it sounds, right? You know, I mean, I did a lot of stuff in between and things like that. So try to do it, you know, because as I said, you know, this is how, you know, as, I don't know, how many of you were here yesterday? You know, so when Geshe-la invited his, you know, abbot friend from Germany to come and teach, right, yesterday? I mean, you know, a couple of things he said, you know, were just amazing, right, is that, we only have this life. I mean, we have more than just this life. But the only guarantee we have is this life. Right? So it's really crucial, you know, he said, it's crucial that we make the effort in this life, not wait till tomorrow. Right? And so, and as it says in here, tonight might be the last night we have. We don't know. So it's important to do it now if we can, right? So start tomorrow morning, you know, take precepts, do whatever, you know? But make the effort to do this practice because it has such great benefit. And it's not just words, right? Because if you can really feel it, I mean, this practice has been done by, you know, we're ordinary beings, right? But by great beings. Lama Tsongkhapa himself did this practice. Nagarjuna did this practice. Bhava Viveka did this practice. All the Atisha did this practice, right? So we're, if it benefited them, believe me, it can benefit us, right? So we should really make an effort to try to take advantage of it, you know? So anyway, I hope you do. Have a good week. See you hopefully tomorrow.